I like to get out the songbook. We're losing a little something when we're losing songbooks, but we've still got them. And you know what I like to do? I like to get back here to page 1032 in our songbook, and I think this is a really good songbook we've got, and look at the index of authors, composers, arrangers, and sources of hymns. And you'll find out that in our songbook, we've got music by Beethoven and Haydn, Handel and Mozart, Schubert, Sibelius. What we're in the music world, we might call real composers. You know, long-haired. I don't know what we would call them today. But music is not my strong suit, so I like to look at the writers. You know, a song is poetry and music put together. And most of our songs are written by what we might call regular folk. We have a number in our book of famous songwriters: Charles Wesley, Isaac Watts, John Newton, who wrote Amazing Grace. But then we have some songs in here by what I will call real poets, ones that you should have studied in high school. And if you don't remember them, you either cut class or slept through it that day. John Greenleaf Whittier is one of them here. And my favorite is William Cowper. C-O-W-P-E-R. Now just remember this, Cowper. Cowper. It's kind of like the town of Cowper. Okay. And he was an English poet, and he was somebody. In fact, he was called the greatest poet of his age. Okay. Elizabeth Barrett Browning wrote a ode, or not an ode, but a eulogy to him called Cowper's Grave. He was a contemporary of the Great Awakening of John Wesley and Whitefield. He tended more toward Whitefield's view of what we would call Calvinism as opposed to Wesley's view of free will. And I think that may affect our lesson today, and you need to remember that. He was somebody, okay? And he wrote a lot, and we know what he thought. Okay, he was a friend of John Newton, who wrote Amazing Grace. In fact, he moved to Olney, England, where Newton was the rector, to be with him. Okay, and they were lifelong friends through some of the worst times in his life. They wrote together the Olney hymn book. I think Cowper had 63 songs. Newton had 200 in the book. But they collaborated on this. Newton, you remember, was a ship's captain and a slaver before he was converted. And Cowper wrote many, many poems in support of ending the slave trade. In the 1700s, that was a big issue in England, who was very instrumental in the slave trade. And he was crazy. He spent his whole life fighting depression. Bad depression. No one knows how many times he tried to commit suicide. But it's 10, 11. His mother died when he was 6. 50 years later, someone sent him a picture of his mother, and he wrote one of the most beautiful poems in the English language on that picture. Soon after that, his father, who was a chaplain to King George II, sent him off to boarding school where he was bullied and where he spent his young life wishing that he could be back with his father where he loved, as opposed to the boarding school. And if you know anything about English boarding schools of those days, it was bad. Finally, when he got out, he took a law degree, but did not practice law. And his father finally got him a job as a clerk in Parliament, which required some pull. And the political enemies decided that, okay, he can have the job, but we have to examine him first. In other words, give him an oral examination. And this was so fearful to him that it sent him into his first great depression. He couldn't do it. And he ended up in what we might call an insane asylum. Okay? The treatment for mental illness at those days was very rudimentary at best. But fortunately, in this insane asylum was run by an evangelical Christian man. Now, back then, evangelical meant that you were part of the Great Awakening as opposed to part of the Church of England, which was just kind of a status quo outfit, you might say. And through this effect, Cooper was converted to Christianity. Converted in his depression. Converted when life was bleak. And not too long afterwards, he was able to go and to leave. He was engaged for 14 years to his first cousin, whose father canceled the marriage about 2 weeks before. Neither of them ever married. Later went to live with a man and his wife. The wife was about 6 years his senior. The man was soon killed in a riding accident, and he and the wife became friends for the rest of their lives till she died some 40 years later. They became engaged. And another depression hit him on the eve, almost the eve of his wedding, and they were never able to be married. And this depression was one of the hardest. And it was one of the worst. About every 10 years in life, he fought these things, but about every 10 years in life, it got so bad that he became suicidal. Often he lived on his own. Sometimes it was John Newton, his friend, that got him through it, who never gave up on him. But during all this time, he wrote three songs that we have in our book. In 1771, and this date is important because the depression we just talked about started in the late 1760s. He wrote, "There is a fountain filled with blood drawn from Emmanuel's veins." And it ends, the final verse is, "Redeeming love has been my theme and will be until I die." He wrote, "Oh, for a closer walk with God." He wanted to be closer to God. And the reason he wanted to be closer to God was because in his view of salvation, remember, he tended to the Calvinistic side, where you were chosen by God. You were picked out, and once you were picked out, you could never be lost. And his view became this: I believe this, but I'm the only person who ever existed whom God has accepted and then rejected. And he saw his mental illness as a definite sign that he was doomed. And yet, oh, for a closer walk with God. And finally, light shining out of darkness, or as we sing it, God moves in a mysterious way, one of the greatest hymns that we have in our book. Light Shining Out of Darkness was the title of the poem. When he got with John Newton, they put it in the Olney Hymn Book under the first line, God Moves in a Mysterious Way. And we ask ourselves, how did this happen? How did a person whose life was defeating him, and he never, even before his conversion, doubted God. God's existence. And then he was converted under a system in his mind that once you were converted with an experience, that was eternal salvation. It was secure. And then he came at times to view, God has turned his back on me. He stopped going to church. He never prayed for 30 years while he was five writing these songs. And we might say to ourselves, well, what a loser. Let these things overcome. But I think what we need to realize here is we haven't walked in his shoes. I'm sure that much of his life was not what we would call rational. He had visions which were scary. Okay. He one time told a cab driver to take him down to the Thames River so he could throw himself in and drown, and the cab driver evidently got lost in the fog. And he began to feel that many times that the Lord was not going to let him commit suicide, that these things kept happening. And in the middle of it all, he wrote words like this: God moves in a mysterious way, his wonders to perform. He plants his footsteps in the sea and rides upon the storm. Deep in unfathomable mines of never-ending skill, he treasures up his bright designs and works his sovereign will. You think you're committed to God. You think you have a strong faith. He had a strong faith that extended beyond his own hope of salvation. We need to think about this. The first thing we need to think is, you know, there are a lot of people who don't have it that well in life. You know, bad things happen to good people. And one of the things I have learned kind of from personal experience is when bad things happen to you, nobody wants to sit beside you. Okay? You can like it or not, but it's true. Nobody wants to sit beside you. I remember my dear Sharon, you know, we lost a baby at 6 months and had to have it, it died in the womb and had to go through induced labor and a bad time. And afterwards she was in the line at the commissary of the grocery store. And there were two women from our church ahead of her. And they never said a word to her. They never even acknowledged her. One of the hardest things that she ever went through. And I think we need to realize that this is hard to do. I don't know what it is. I guess we're afraid that the bad luck is going to rub off on us. Maybe we think that, I don't have anything to say. Maybe we feel guilty because the bad thing hasn't happened to us. But this is what happens, okay? And men like William Cooper, if they teach us nothing else, teach us that we need to be with these people. Amen. Okay. Just because somebody is failing in life doesn't mean that they deserve to be rejected. Now, had God really rejected William Cooper? No, he hadn't. He had kind of a world view that made him come to this, but he hadn't, had he? Okay. He hadn't, but he felt like he had, and still he remained faithful. Ye fearful saints, fresh courage take, the clouds ye so much dread. You can imagine that. A person who is in the darkness of pessimism. Okay, the darkness of pessimism. What could be more pessimistic that you spend some days that the God you love, that you're absolutely convinced is there, and you think he's going to damn you to hell? What greater darkness could they be? Are big with mercy and shall break in blessings on your head. And so we begin to see in this verse something of his salvation, don't we? Because the one thing he never lost in all this was, I guess I should say two things, is one, that God's in charge. And number two, even though I can't figure it out, it's somehow going to work out. Well, I don't think we take 18th century poets as our examples. Okay, I think that we sing this song, and hopefully when we sing it sometime, the next time we sing it, it'll have more meaning to you. But I think that we find that what he was going through is not unique. In fact, it is all through Scripture. This, by the way, was the verse which he said was his inspiration. For this song. Oh, the depths and the riches and the wisdom and the knowledge of God, how searchable are his judgments and how inscrutable his ways. And we kind of read that in our optimism, and I think this is good, if God's going to do good stuff for me. And you can imagine how he was reading this. I'm caught in mental illness. For who has known the mind of the Lord, and who has been his counselor, or who has given a gift to him that he might be repaid? When they printed this song in the Only Song book, this was the verse that was mentioned with it. John 13:7. This is the story of Jesus washing the disciples' feet. You remember? And he comes to Peter, and Peter says, you're not washing my feet? And later he will say to him, unless I wash your feet, you've got nothing to do with me. And Peter will say, well, then wash my whole body. But in the middle, he says this. Jesus says, what I am doing, you do not understand now, but afterward you will understand. Can you imagine what hope that would give a person in the darkness that William Cooper was in? Can you imagine what hope that would give a person who is in the darkness of job loss, broken marriage, any of the ills which are in our society today? Can you imagine what hope that could give a person who's sitting in a pew with us and says, you know, I'm not getting any of this good stuff out of God. Well, it's not happening. Well, that's kind of a picture of him. He was painted by the great, I forgot to write down the name of the guy who painted this portrait, but he was the great portrait painter of his day. And it's a pretty good portrait, isn't it? And you see something in those eyes of what we're talking about, this fear of life. This, I'm okay now, but it's coming. This is not only a John Cooper thing. You know, when Jaron died, I began to read the Psalms. And the best Psalms are about the first 35 of them. Okay, I got to admit this to you. Okay, about the first 35 of them. The first Psalm, the law of the Lord is perfect, making wise the soul. The 19th Psalm, the heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament showeth his handiwork. The 23rd Psalm, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. But you know, as you read these first 30 or so Psalms, you come across some completely different messages. Okay. This is a little surprising to you. You need to read them. You need to read them for what they really say. To you, O Lord, I call, David wrote, my rock, be not deaf to me. Lest if you be silent to me, I become like those who go down to the pit. Lord, if you don't listen to me, I'm going to die. My God, why have you forsaken me? Sound familiar? Yeah, it is. Why are you so far from saving me? From the words of my groaning, oh my God, I cry by day, but I do not answer, and by night, but I do not find rest. The people of God have gone through these things since the beginning. Okay? Don't ask me why. God moves in a mysterious way, his wonders to perform. But it's been true. Okay. Job. You know, the kind of the marquee book of this. And Job finally says, he says, though he, and he's talking about God, though he slay me, I will hope in him. It's a lot like what William Cooper was going through. Maybe something of what you've gone through. Maybe something of what the person you don't want to sit next to is going through. Okay. Yet will I argue my ways to his face. This will be my salvation, that the godless shall not come before him. The whole book of Habakkuk, three chapters, so whole is kind of an overstatement. It's the only prophecy which does not rail against Israel or against evil in the world. It rails against God. The first half of it is, God, why are you letting all these evil things happen? And the second half is, why are you going to call the Chaldeans down here to punish us? They're a whole lot worse than we are. Oh Lord, how long shall I cry for help, and you will not hear? Or cry to you violence, and you will not save? Oops. It won't stop on that one. There we go. Paul said this way, in a little bit brighter note, We are afflicted in every way, but not crushed. Perplexed, but not driven to despair. Persecuted, but not forsaken. Struck down, but not destroyed. Always carrying in the body of the death of Jesus, so that the life of Jesus may also may manifest in our bodies. Peter spent time in despair for rejecting the Lord. Stephen was killed. Okay. Over and over and over again, we find people who have been able to overcome when everything wasn't good. Okay. Anybody can do good when times are good. If you haven't been making money in the stock market lately, you just haven't been in. Okay? You understand what I'm saying? But what really matters, what really shows who we are, is when times are not good. What can we do? And when times are good for us, when there's somebody whose times are not good for, what is our attitude toward them? Now, if you don't want to sing William Cooper songs, I guess I don't blame you. We don't sing them as much as we should. Okay, they're a little 18th century-ish. You know, have a few words that we don't use anymore. But I don't think you can reject the man's stamina. I don't think you can reject the man's faith, which transcended his own situation. I don't think you can reject the man at all. Jesus wept. Shortest verse in the Bible. Rejected by man. He quoted Psalms, didn't he? Where did he quote it? On the cross, in pain. My God, why have you forsaken me? And we're just so glad that he could finally say, it is finished. Some think it ought to say, it is completed. Both ideas are in those words. Okay. And William Cooper, okay, did the same thing. And he's kind of a sign to us of what we can do in our life, okay? Who we can associate with in our life. I was at a funeral Friday. Good friend of Sharon and mine. She was 78, and she had had cancer, and it had gone in remission, and then it came back. And she spent the last 2.5 months in a good bit of pain in hospice care. And the preacher came to her at the last time, and she talked about her funeral. And he says, what do you want read? And she told him Habakkuk. Now, when the preacher was up there and he said Habakkuk, I'm going Habakkuk. You know, usually we get some Psalms or something out of 1 Corinthians 15. This is not the usual thing. And then I got to thinking, well, you know, it does. Paul does quote, the righteous shall live by faith. Maybe that's what it's coming. But it wasn't. This great Christian woman who was overcoming in loss put the last verses of Habakkuk. This psalm that he wrote. And it's this. Though the fig tree should not blossom, nor the fruit be on the vines, the produce of the olive fail, and the fields yield no food, the flock be cut off from the fold, and there will be no herd in the stalls. In other words, in an agrarian society, I'm going broke. I'm going hungry. Okay? Nothing is working. Yet I will rejoice in the Lord. I will take joy in the God of my salvation. Okay. What a wonderful eulogy. What a wonderful attitude to have in your mind. She didn't, as far as I know, have any fig trees or flocks. Did live out in the country, so maybe she had a few chickens. Okay, but still, nothing was going right in her life. She was going to die. Wasn't afraid of it, but she was going to die. Yet, I will rejoice in the Lord. Okay. Judge not the Lord by a feeble sense, but trust Him for His grace. Behind a frowning providence, He hides a smiling face. His purposes will ripen fast, unfolding every hour. The bud may have a bitter taste, but sweet will be the flower. This guy could write. Okay. Blind belief is sure to err, blind unbelief is sure to err, and scan his work in vain. God is his own interpreter, and he will make it plain.